So what do we got here? We got hydrogen in the Rydberg, and we got on the 420 megahertz. So they're talking about hydrogen, aren't they? Let's go to the next one. The next one is GBBG. Let's call it 54 times 54. The answer to that is 2,916. A light bulb goes off. The number 2,916 is a well-known number to just about any Egyptologist that ever lived. There is an ancient unit of measure that comes to us from a time before there were even pharaohs in Egypt, what you call the pre-dynastic time. There was a unit of measure that was used to weigh gold and silver. It was called the Atarba, A-R-T-A-B-A. The Atarba consisted of 29,160 cubic centimeters. So in other words, 54 times 54 gives you 2,916, where the 29,160 is just raised by the power of 10. Hydrogen atom, ancient Egypt, right? Now let's look at 54 times 54. That's a square. Square. Oh, whoa. Okay. If you find the diagonal of that square, you're going to get the number 76.3, and so on. That is the number of what you call green raw feet in the base of the Great Pyramid of Giza. Now we have no doubt whatsoever they're referring to the pyramid. They're talking about the hydrogen atom, they're talking about the pyramid. Okay? What the guys at this Project Contact did not realize is that there were actually two units at time. We figured out what the other one was. The other one is the, if you take 1 and divide it by 81 times 40, it's going to give you 0.4938. Okay, that's the other unit. And you divide, okay, now we take that unit and come back and divide it into 54, the first 54. And you get the number 121.5. Well, that's the wavelength of the hottest line of hydrogen. That's the line that has the most energy in it. Okay? Now we take just one more little thing. I hope they're not making this confusing. But we discovered that each tone had three values. Okay? We've been talking about the tone having, you know, like a B54. Actually, it has a value of 6, 18, and 54. We came up with it because that is a number that's expressed in the pyramid all the time. In other words, if you take what is called the apothem of the pyramid, the line that comes down each face, from the peak to the base. Now, the Great Pyramid has an indented apothem. Okay, we call that the ghost apothem. But let's just use it. If you divide the apothem into the perimeter, you'll get that number. If you take what we call a sequence, a raw sequence, which is 1 divided by 81 gives you 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and the 8th missing, 9, 0. And you multiply that by 40, you're going to get that number. this number was also extrapolated out of measurements made by Richard Hoagland and Earl Charon at Cydonia on the planet Mars, when they did research on the distances that the buildings were separated and things like that. They misunderstood. They thought that value was 5. See, it's 0.49. They thought that was 5. Okay. Mistakenly. And so they were using a number that they said they took the square root of 5. Well, if you take the square root of the number I'm talking about, you're going to get 0.22222222222. And that is what you call the sixth repetend, or 6 divided by 27. Okay? Now, I don't want to get too much in math, because it's easier to come back to the messages and point out why we're excited. It's easy to understand the math if you're looking at it. You don't have to be a genius to understand it. But whoever wrote it was certainly a genius. Because they perfectly put this message, these messages together, the way they're written is important. We're learning, as I say, every day. But back to the first truth. Now we take, so you take it and divide it by 6 by the time unit. You get the 1.5, which is the hotline hydrogen. You take the 18 and divide it by that number, and you get 36.45. Or if you move the decimal to the right, it would be 364.5. That number is well known in physics as the Balmer constant for hydrogen. Use that in simple formulas, and it will give you the wavelength for hydrogen that we can see. Now you go to the 54, of course, and with this one, and it's going to give you 109.35. That is an infrared line in hydrogen. That's called bracket M6, in the infrared. So if this is a coincidence, you know, there's no way it can be. There's no way this could be made up. Can you imagine somebody coming up with the hot hydrogen mines, the Balmer constant, the Rydberg constant, as tones that represent an extraterrestrial message, a fictitious message? No way. No way. So our progress has, up until 2002, all the years I spent researching the Ross system, my thought it only had five formats. Okay. Now, due to the messages, we know it has 360. It's 360 formats. So our knowledge has expanded. Now, coming back to our 54 times 54, that indicates that they wanted us to mathematically put together a pyramid with a 54-foot or 54-unit side. So we did, mathematically, and on paper. And the relationship of that pyramid, which we call the ET pyramid, the difference between it and the Great Pyramid is simply 2. You're like one feature. You compare the height to the other. You're either going to get 2 or you're going to get the square root of 2. Like you take the base, compare the base to the other base, you're going to get the square root of 2. Or the cross-section to the other cross-section, you're going to get the same thing. So it's obvious that they wanted us to look at that. Now, it's been a long mystery. In fact, in the 1800s, the British had they're famous for putting out prizes. If you can, you know, like they got the guy to build the clock so they could do better navigation at sea, and then you give a prize. And it's like Rutan and his spaceship One, you know, they can go ahead and build it and then get $10 million.
Right. So they had a prize for this.
That's right. So they had a prize for somebody who could square the circle.
And so they had this prize back in the 1800s.
Right. Basically, in the cold winter nights in England in the fog, these guys would be sitting there with their pencils and trying to figure out how to do this. Never could, because what they're already dealing with is the infinitesimal value of pi. You know, how can you accurately, you know, make such a switch? Well, it came to us that there was a way to do this, and it's very simple. The value is 1.125, okay? And if you divide that into 1, you're going to get the number 0.8888888, which is 24 divided by 27. But let's start with our 1.125. Take 54, okay? Multiply it by that, and you're going to get the number 60.75. Now that's the diameter of the circle. But the thing here is the value of, if you use that number, it sets the other thing you're working with up to be handled differently. Now that the number which is called omega minor pi, which is 3.16 oh blah blah blah. Okay? Use that value for pi to do it, and it comes out exactly the area of that thing comes out exactly 2916. Okay, exactly. So essentially what you've done is squared the circle. Okay, now can you do that with a cube, you know? You can. Yeah, but you see, a cube, it's 3 times 54 times 54, you know, 54 times 54 times 54 gives you a, again, the numbers are heavy. If I had them in front of me, it's a lot easier. Don't get tired trying to recall them by memory. But the area of the 6 faces of this particular cube to its volume is exactly 9, which is the magic number to Ross and of the messages. Because you actually got 81 tones in these messages in 9 messages. So 81 times 80, 9 times 9 is 81. And you've got 9 messages. Okay. So what this tells us is, yeah, you end up with, when you use this other version of pi, like I was saying, in the formula for finding a sphere, okay, the 60.75, and you're supposed to remember 10.6 here, where you come back to that, but the 60.75, and you use, of course, it's 4 times pi and so forth, and then you divide it by 3, and it gives you the number of cubes in the sphere. In this case, you're going to end up with the number 118.098, okay? Well, that is not the size of the cube, okay? What if discovered here is that what they've been doing is there are two kinds of cubes, the little ones and the big ones. So in this process, you're converting them to into small cubes, so you got more of them. Do you understand? And then, so it's a way to adjust the formula and it comes out exactly right. See, they hadn't realized that in their conversions, they were coming up with small cubes. Do you understand? Where there's such a thing as small cubes and large cubes. So what I'm trying to say is that we've done that now, been able to determine the size of the electron, the size of the proton, the size of the neutron, and how many of these large cubes and small cubes are in these particles. And apparently, you can charge some of the large ones and not charge the small ones. Okay, and mix and match is what I'm trying to say. So it could open up a new form of physics on how to convert matter into what makes a proton instead of a positron instead of a electron. It's because maybe the small cubes are charged and the big ones aren't, so it's positive, or vice versa. So what I'm saying is exciting. You know, you talk about mind-blowing. And we have not even got past the first three sections of the first message in what I'm explaining here. And there are 46 sections in the first message. The third message has over 1,500 tones. So you can see why we wanted to try to find a way to accelerate this. You know, we got to find a way to accelerate it.
Do you have an idea?
Well, we did.
What we need to do? What do we need to do?
Well, it was a bad idea, the last one, because NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science, had been presenting themselves for years as being a group that had the capability and the integrity. And if they say, oh, whatever we find, we're going to publish. So then that is a long story. It's not a good one. We approached them. We gave them certain material. They kept asking for more. They wanted the information, but they wanted nothing to do with us. Let's put it that way. When finally we knew that they were just dangling a carrot, you know, Mr. Bigelow's money, we just said that's enough of it. And we refused to give them any more information. And then the NID story goes on and on, but...
Well, Wes, are you looking for somebody else to help you with this now? Or?
Well, of course.
Right.
We could use some personnel that have certain abilities in computers and so forth. And we would like to do a crypto-analytical program which NID claimed they were going to do, but they didn't realize that they need the pyramid data. They couldn't possibly put together a program to solve these messages without that information. And they knew that only we had that information, 35, 40 years of researching it. So they needed us, but... they didn't like that fact. So they thought they could do it on their own without that information. Well, it will not work, not knowing that. But with a crypto analytical program, with the pyramid data plugged into it, we could move ahead a lot faster. No way can I say how fast we'll move, but we'll move a lot faster. Now, in these messages could be any number of things. It could be a cure for diseases that have troubled us for years. It could be a landing date. You know, urgent. It could be a very urgent thing. These things were on the internet for seven years, and they went off in 2002. Now we're at, so that's 9 years. I think they're more, I think they're 2 years older, you see.
Than that.
Yeah, so I think we're talking 10, 11 years ago these things were transmitted.
Do you have any idea where these messages are coming from out there?
Yes, they come from inside our solar system. That's one of the reasons you got a problem with SETI. See, SETI wants to hear something, but they want it to be 11 light years away, so that it takes 11 years to talk, 11 years to answer. In the meantime, everybody gets a paycheck. You know, the joke is I'm putting the... See, SETI, there's a lot of SETIs. You got C-SETI, you got the SETI League, the SETI Institute, and these. But I'm going to put one together that's called the Search for Egotistical Terrestrial Idiots.
That's good.
You know,
that's good.
You know, well, what we're going to do, as long as the money holds out, we're going to look for extraterrestrials on Waikiki. Or, remember the Conehead movie where Dan Aykroyd,
yes,
they were aliens, right, and they told their neighbors they were from France? Well, that's where we think we'll go. We'll look for aliens over in France.
What's a question? If something 11 light years away, would that be outside our heliopause?
Yes, it certainly would.
And if something was outside our heliopause, would we realistically get a signal from outside?
I'm glad you brought that up, Rod, because that's exactly what's happening here. You're getting signals, but what they started out to be is not what we get. And in other words, it's changed in its movement through space. The signal is altered or gets changed. Now, how and how can we say that? Well, we live in a magnetic a gravitational lens. We call it our solar system. If you're inside of that lens, where we are, if you go out at night, you look up, you see the stars. The light from the stars, you're there. Now, if you travel to the extreme end of our solar system, to an edge, the edge, it's called the heliopause, as you know. If you cross the heliopause, you have no influence from the sun. In fact, the Pioneer spacecraft out there are having a problem leaving the solar system. You know, it's one of those little things that are going on that not too many people are talking about. These things just can't get out, okay? They keep getting pulled back in at that one point. Now, if you were able to have 1 foot inside the solar system and 1 foot out, but you, okay, let's say you went out of the solar system and you looked up at the sky, you wouldn't see a thing. It'd be totally black. No starlight, no nothing. If you step back in to the solar system and look up, there's the stars. So light as we know it only manifests inside a solar system. The distance between solar systems don't exist. Now, it does and it don't. Okay, now that sounds contradictory, but you got to understand this. If you've run certain experiments on light, the results are going to say light is in the form of little energy packets called photons. Okay? Now you run another type of experiment, and it says light is in the form of waves. Now, which is right? What form is it in? It's in both. It's alternating back and forth between one and the other. Okay. Now, that alternation that going back and forth governs the speed of light inside a lens. It says that the speed of light is 186,233 miles a second inside a vacuum.
Wes, I think this would be a good place to wrap up this first hour. We're going to talk to you some more about these messages from outer space on another hour coming up pretty soon. But the time is up. The clock has us. Basically, we discussed this before, remember, and it was basically the fact that that's how you get warp drive on Star Trek, and you were instrumental in getting that done. In other words, you go to the end of the light lens of our solar system, and voila, you end up at somebody else's solar system into their light lens. So you take a shortcut, so to speak, warp it out as you beat Einstein's theory of relativity. Wes, I've enjoyed it. We're from Dolan Springs. That's in Arizona, right on the Arizona side of Lake Mead, back into the desert. Interesting place. Interesting person, Wes Bateman. Thanks for being here. Our own location producer was Roberta Scott. I'm Jerry Pippin. Until next time, cheers.
If you're looking for adventure, information, and entertainment on the Internet, one stop fits all, jerrypippin.com. At jerrypippin.com, you'll find multimedia entertainment at its best. Almost 2 million people are enjoying hours of entertainment and information. Hit it now. www.jerrypippin.com.